And now, live from the studios of Freedom's Phoenix, Ernest Hancock.
Believe me when I say we have a difficult time ahead of us. But if we are to be prepared for it, we must first shed our fear of it. I stand here without fear because I remember. I remember that I am here not because of the path that lies before me, but because of the path that lies behind me. I remember that for 100 years we have fought these machines. And after a century of war, I remember that which matters most. We are still here! Today, let us make them remember. We are not afraid!
Unafeared here on Declare Your Independence. I'm here in the Stancock here in Phoenix, Arizona, from the BEA beautiful studios of Freedom's with an Astronomy's Phoenix.com with the Trump Report. Trump Report. Dr. Frank Embury. Hello, Doctor. How are you?
Good morning, everybody. I'm doing well.
Donald He's there. Trump. He's there. Yeah, he's on time. He's at his house and he made
the miracle of Skype, yes.
All right. Now this is we got some top stories. We have, cloud cities of airships that are doing the in Venus, which means we could do it on Earth too. Fusion GPS. Glenn Simpson to plead the fifth on Capitol Hill. Of course. Judge dismisses Stormy Daniels' lawsuit against Trump, orders her to pay his legal fees. There's so much stuff, but what are we going to talk about? We had Trump on 60 Minutes. We had Melania on ABC. Yeah, the Melania thing. I've only got to see like an 8-minute clip of it. They're like dribbling it out in drabs. Have you seen any more than that?
No. Just an argument with Lindsey Stahl. Not an argument, just kind of putting her in her place, essentially. He even tells Lindsey Stahl towards the end of the interview, and he just says, you know what? I'm president and you're not.
I know that was the ending. I'm like, and I'm president and you're not.
That was pretty much it. That was like, that sums it up.
Mic drop.
That's 60 minutes, mind you,
Yeah, she went after him. She wanted to get some and wanted him to say certain things and he wouldn't say it, And then of course you can see why, because the clips that are used on whatever, they would definitely. And his thing was, he still left it open that there's going to be the threat of being separated from your children. You show up with your family. Don't count on, they go, he's got these little children. I can't believe you. And he's going, look, man, there has to be some repercussions. You come up with the message, and they would tout it to every freaking airwave across South and Central America would be, if you show up, your family gets to stay together. And, oh, by the way, they'll feed you. Boom, here they come. So he's like, nope, not saying it. And that was one thing. They wanted him to say it. And why? They want a big wave of immigration or something? What's their purpose?
They're just trying to force the new narrative, Ernie. And that's, look, that's what I wanted. I was telling Don as well. What I wanted to focus on today in general is we're a few weeks away from the midterms, which is not just about the midterms, which I know to you it doesn't matter, and I get it. But because of the midterms and because of the Kavanaugh issue and such, and a number of factors I want to bring up today, is the most profound point of what Donald Trump is doing that I think many of our libertarian friends would go back on when people say, well, what has he done? He hasn't cured cancer yet. He hasn't, gotten rid of the Fed. He hasn't pulled all the troops out yesterday and all this kind of thing. What has he done? And I think that what it comes down to, again, is the culture shift. And I have seen over the last couple of weeks, just the last week or so, especially last week, a profound change in the culture. It's sort of like the silent majority that's been just still holding out, thinking that this might be a dream, that, that Donald Trump is going to go away and he's not going to be there protecting people to be able to say what they want to say. And I think people are starting to really settling in on both sides, that we have a new reality, and the silent majority has finally awoken, and it's happening whether it's through timing or not with the midterms. And that's, I don't want to get complicated with the midterms, but it's been profound. I know I've said it a few times, but it is the capstone, if nothing else. has been a study that came out, most of you may have seen already, about political correctness being widely unpopular with all Americans. 80%, it just came out a few days ago. You know, the left is not talking about it that much, clearly. But 80% of all Americans, and this includes people who are young, older, all races, sex, I mean, whatever it might be. In general, it's about equal as far as how many people disdain political correctness, which has been reinforcing that there is, this has been a silent majority issue. You gotta understand, Donald Trump won. He won, I think, he crushed on election night. I think he's either the first Republican or the first president at all since 1988 to get like 300 electoral votes. I mean, so it wasn't just a fluke as much as they keep trying to make it sound like.
Oh, but he didn't get the popular vote. Didn't get the popular vote.
Exactly.
He's not president. Exactly. He's not president.
Exactly. I think what we're finding, I'll just give a couple examples, you know, why I'm making an issue about it. I mean, first off, we have the thing that happened with Elizabeth Warren, and she is completely daft. And I use that term properly as in daft punk, but you know, she is daft politically, has no understanding of what she's doing. She's already just killed her political aspirations. We'll talk about her later, but what she opened up is a can of worms as far as the left. You know, on one hand, the left saying that we're all, you know, that we're all, it's like identity politics, right? You can't comment unless you happen to be a female from Swahili with a certain handicap, then you can comment, right? So it's like everyone's got to be silent if you're not exactly a certain type of identity. But at the same time, then they want to say that we're all alike, we're all the same, and we're all equal, and no one's better or different than somebody else. And now you've got Elizabeth Warren, in order, because she's so selfish to be, you know, for her own power issues, you know, she tries to get into college claiming that she's a minority, and now she's stuck with that brand. So then she comes out, you know, yesterday.
Okay, wait. Is that where it came from? She did that to get a cheaper education or something?
Oh, not just cheaper, just to be accepted into college. She couldn't get into certain universities. So all of a sudden, in the later applications to colleges, she started identifying as Native American. So she started playing the minority card. And that has haunted her ever since.
Oh,
right?
So that's where that came from. That wasn't...
Exactly.
All right. Now, wait a minute. There was a guy... Yeah, I think that was a big fan of you. We interviewed the guy that was, you know, vote for the real Indian. Okay, is he running against her? That was this election cycle, isn't it?
I don't know. But I mean, but for this point, she's running for president. I mean, she has her 2020 commission, and she just put out an ad.
She's got to win her freaking race first. Anybody gives a crap.
Well, if anyone, she'll probably win it. I mean, she's popular enough in her state. Check out if you want to play over the break. You know, Elizabeth Warren just came out with this commercial. Did you see the commercial yesterday?
No.
Pull it up. Elizabeth Warren. I've never seen anything like this. First off, when I said she's daft, the midterms are in a few weeks, right? And she's sucking all the energy out of the narrative for the next week, talking about her and about what is being minority or not. Well, we'll talk about that in a second. That's what she's brought up. But she's done it when the Democrats are already falling behind and all the factors we talked last week going into the damn midterms. So even the Democrats are mad at her because she's completely changed the narrative away and put it on her, and she has nothing to gain from it. She's not running this time. So she's already sucked it towards herself, and it's very bad political timing. So anyway, but that's what she's pulled off, and now that she's come out with her proof through a testing service, right? She's one of those little gene test services. Donald Trump said publicly that if you would get yourself tested, I'll donate $1 million. To your favorite charity, right? So he said that, and so of course Elizabeth Warren finally went ahead. She knows that she can't get from under this. She gets herself tested, and then she films the whole thing, and she makes a commercial, and she releases the commercial yesterday. It's like the strangest political ad ever, justifying that she really is Native American, and she's got that. She's got like the geneticist on the phone. You got to pull it up.
Okay, by how much? I mean, she's like, you know, 2.6%.
No, dude. I'm sorry, that's the kicker. She's like 0.001 or something. She's like, I mean, matter of fact, the host of the Fox is 3% in his line. Like most of us have probably some Native American somewhere in there somewhere.
Do I care?
No. She's completely undermined the whole concept of identity politics in one swipe. We'll talk about this when we get back. But political correctness is dead.
Yeah, good. You know, this identity politic, I'm like, you know, right about the time we all learn what it means, we don't care.
From the sixth letter of Captain Mark. A pirate's life is characterized by voluntary interactions. Unfortunately, the crown presses everyone into involuntary servitude. Landlubbers believe slavery was abolished years ago, but the crown still claims to own us when it crimps us into service against our will. Given sufficient ambition, it would gladly draft thousands of hapless victims to kill or be killed. It's simply slavery by another name. Landlubbers are routinely commanded to serve the so-called justice system in jury duty. But before you swell with civic pride, consider that how you feel is irrelevant to the crown. You will appear as ordered or face punitive measures. The crown insists that you participate in your own oppression. A jury summons provides pirates with a unique opportunity to obstruct injustices. A juror can vote not guilty, even if it's proven the law was violated. A juror can acquit for any reason at all, and not even a judge can reverse that verdict. Receiving a jury summons is basically winning the sedition lottery. But if you reveal that you know this during jury selection, you'll probably be dismissed. If the crown foolishly crimps a pirate into jury duty, it behooves the pirate to conceal their intention to nullify unjust laws. If a master takes 100% of your labor, it's called slavery. But if they only take 50%, they call it taxation, a difference of degree, not of kind. Whether the crown claims a fortune or a cent is irrelevant. Most of all, a slave owner desires contented slaves, meaning thoughtless ones that accept their bondage. These house slaves see no contradiction in being drafted in a war to end slavery or summoned to a jury to prosecute tax evasion. An ideal slave knows no higher call than the master's will. The crown's highest ambition is that its slaves revere the authority that subjugates them. But the crown does not own me. I will not surrender my time and treasure to the crown's ambitions. Join the conversation at piratewithoutborders.com.
Love what we do? Please help support our international satellite channels at patreon.lrn.fm. That's patreon.lrn.fm.
To be a part of the show, call 602-264-2800. 602-264-2800. And now, Ernest Hancock.
To you, I apologize. To the fake Pocahontas, I won't apologize.
All right, now
I hear some of your Republicans.
I am a Republican.
All right, no, this is like a 5-minute freaking commercial, Frank. Do I really want to do it?
No, I can't handle 5 minutes. They just played some clips on the air. I thought it was like a minute. But anyway, you get the idea. She goes through this whole little mini. I mean, like I said, it's something I've never seen. I've never seen a so-called political ad that's 5 minutes. That's a pseudo reality show tracking her, finding her roots. It's just like the TV show Roots from the 70s, you know, with Elizabeth Warren. But the thing is, what this has done is completely blown out of the water this hypocrisy of who they are and about what identity politics is. I mean, this goes back to the concept that you are whatever you say you are. You know, you're whatever gender that you claim. Remember Rachel Dolezal? Remember that woman who was the white woman who was head of the
NAACP?
And she says, well, all right, well, I might be white, but I identify as black, so therefore I'm black. Right? So now you've got Elizabeth Warren, who's got like 0.01. She's like 1,000th Indian blood in her or something. And now she's be able to say, you see, Donald Trump, I really do have Indian blood, so you owe me $1 million to my charity.
$1 million just to take the test.
No, he was going to give $1 million to her charity for doing it. So it's technically she claims she's done it. And now if Trump doesn't give the million, now they're all claiming that he lies, right, which feeds into their narrative. Personally, he should just give the $1 million
and laugh it out
because this is really hysterical. She's losing more than she thinks she's gaining.
I don't think it was Donald Trump. It was another guy that offered the million.
No. Donald Trump did.
She got 2 million.
Hey, exactly. Here's the kicker. She decided she was going to give the money to some Native American foundation, right? Well, then this morning, a Native American foundation or one of them came out today and said, basically, keep your money, and you're actually doing worse damage to us. That you're undermining what this whole principle is. So even Native Americans are now turning.
Yeah, we don't want you.
So anyway, this is not about Elizabeth Warren. This is just sort of like the. a watershed event between Kavanaugh and now, and strangely, with Warren going right into these midterms, and it's exposing this hypocrisy of identity politics that has plagued for so long. Let me get to a couple of things that have been happening, right? So you've got this PC study coming out just a couple days ago, and it's many people are talking about it. When I'm just looking on YouTube, for instance, and I track all sorts of different topics, not just politics and economics, but a lot of pop culture things, as you guys know, sports, different things, just to get a sense of where people are in different fields, including CNN and MSNBC. I suffer watching that. I want to hear how they see it. And I'll tell you, this political correct study issue is permeating all different topics. Everyone's talking about it from whatever their shows are. So that's what else is going on that shows this destruction is falling apart. You've got, of course, the blue wave collapsing in almost all of the studies leading to midterms. We talked about some of this last week with the enthusiasm gap that's melting away and in favor of the party in power. This is unprecedented, especially a party and a president that has been pummeled more than anyone in U.S. history, at least modern history. Then we have, of course, some things, the black vote, and this is before Kanye. Right, the black vote was only about 15% in support of Trump over when he got elected, and a little bit afterwards. Recently, it's doubled to about 30%. The Hispanic vote in many different districts, the Hispanic vote is now switching quite a bit more, if not to Trump, then many of them are not really coming out to support the Democrat. They're just staying home, which you can interpret either way. So if they're losing the Hispanic vote and then also the black vote, then you get Kanye on TV, and now, of course, the black community is having a whole other discussion about black shaming and about telling someone how to think and about being on the plantation or not, and that's more of a discussion in that community. But my God, he's lit a firestorm there. He basically called out all the leftists, you know, Don Lemon and all the rest, calling him a minstrel and all sorts of names that you could never even imagine a white person saying, right? Which brings up a whole other component about what's fair to say or not. Now let's keep going on. You've got in pop culture, and you might think this is all silly, but these are massive changes. You have The Conners, which premieres tonight. I can't believe I'm plugging that on your show. Actually, I'm not plugging it. Don't watch it. The Conners, you know, is the spinoff of Roseanne. So Roseanne got canned, and then, of course, the woman who plays her daughter on the show in real life is a leftist. And she sat there, and she threw her TV mom, Roseanne, who gave her a job, I may add, under the bus and said, I don't want to be working for a racist person anyway, so I will take the show over and let's make it about me. And we're going to make it about a liberal family and how we all have common sense now in our family. We'll call it The Conners. So Roseanne Barr they made some deal. Well, The Conners premieres tonight, and they're killing off Roseanne. She actually dies of an opioid overdose. They're just killing her off with opioids, right? And they actually think people are going to watch this damn show. It's incredible. It's incredible. We could see this a mile away. Well, it turns out that the ratings that are already leading into this are so abysmal that ABC, that had the top show in a decade with the Roseanne show just last year, now this show is like tracking out. It's probably below America's Funniest Videos or something. It's like horrendous, and it's coming out tonight. And the thing is, the head of ABC was on an interview a few days ago and admitted for the first time and said, I think maybe we handled the Roseanne thing wrong. We should not have fired her. So he's admitting that basically, no matter, the more they push this Conner show, the more the ratings going into it keep going down. The people hate, the hate mail keeps going out the more they push it. So the fact that ABC is admitting what they did was wrong. Now let's go to another point. Star Wars, which I've talked about on the show, not to make this not to water down what we're talking about. I've talked many times how the leftists have taken over, the political correct have taken over all areas of pop culture, Star Wars being one we've discussed. Well, the thing is, they have people who work for them who have blatantly come out on their Twitter feeds and all sorts of media blasting anyone that voted for Trump as a racist and a bigot and don't come watch Star Wars and we don't want your kind and we don't need you old people and we're going to indoctrinate the young people. I mean, they say this blatantly. It's like me as a doctor putting on my website, that I don't want to see Democrats or something like that. I mean, you couldn't even imagine in an environment just 5-10 years ago, businesses breaking down that wall. And yet Disney has allowed this to happen. Steve Gunn from Guardians of the Galaxy, all of this. Well, anyway, Steve Windig, Steve Windig or Scott Windig, I forget his name. Anyway, he's one of the head writers of Disney for Star Wars, and he has been a thorn in the side just mocking people and ticking off their fan base for the last couple of years, and then the revolt. Disney finally fired him just the other day. And this is unprecedented again. I mean, this has been years.
For what cause?
Basically, well, we don't know exactly. We pretty much know why, though.
Well, I mean, did they say he needed more family time or some BS like that, or what?
Oh, yeah. Well, whatever. Yeah, we're parting company, whatever it is. But I think he just finished another one of his rants on Twitter, and finally they canned him. The thing is, you have to understand, it's not just the fact he did it once. He's been doing this for years. Imagine if
that was his job. Yeah, it's Disney. You know, it's just part of the they, them, those, or the mindset of. You know, I saw the 2 hours and something on the Rogan Experience with Roseanne. You know, 2 hours of Roseanne. I mean, that's all I, you know, I mean, I had it in the background. I listened to her, watched some of it, kind of sitting in the back and whatever over the weekend. But it probably took me like 3 days to finish it. But the thing was, is that, you know, Roseanne's got her own. She's Roseanne. She's, you know, freaking got mental issues. In fact, was checked into a mental institution at 15. Her own stand-up comic. She's not like a bastion of anything. But so what? This was not about that. Yeah, this is, I watched the thing, and she's kind of just, you know, she got her money. She did okay. She didn't want to have anything bad. I don't want to say anything. You know, they do their thing, and I signed off and let them do whatever. They gave me a little bit of money, but I let them because these people had jobs. I mean, you know, they're going to lose their job. They probably already spent the money. They fired me. They're going to go, keep the job. You know, don't blame me, man, go. So then Rogan had the idea. He goes, well, you could still be in the show. You could come back as a ghost. You could haunt them. You could, you know, give advice. You could do, which, you know, may happen. But it's done. It's over. The Conner, it's over. And
Wait. Yeah, but, you know, since we're in the after show for a second, you might find this fascinating. First off, before we get on a rabbit hole in this, Last Man Standing, the show that you love, is now, that is blowing all the ratings out of the water. So that's fantastic. And that's on Fox, right, the other Fox show. Now, here's the kicker. Roseanne Barr, when she left, and they did the little severance last minute, right? They were highly pressured. They said, all right, Roseanne, just sign here on the dotted line and just allow us to control the show. But in return, you will be allowed to retain the rights to the characters of your show. So she still retains them. And so people are talking about sort of like an alternate universe where she actually shows up on Last Man Standing as Roseanne. We can have two separate Roseanne storyline universes going on based off of the rights issue.
Wait. So she still owns Roseanne.
Yeah, she still owns Roseanne, and I think she may even still own the other characters. The thing is, they just probably figure she's not going to do anything with it because ABC is the one running the show, and all the actors are on the Conner show.
So after Conner's tank, she could start Roseanne back on
exactly.
Fox.
Exactly. If she wants to take it somewhere else, she could. She
you know, the first. Rights. Did you see the first episode of Last Man Standing?
No, I haven't a chance to watch that yet.
Okay, so have you ever seen any of it?
One, yeah. It's
okay.
A good show.
So Last Man Standing, they come back, and the whole first episode was kind of them transitioning into the new network, making fun of NBC and what idiots they are in a fun kind of way, you know. They're just really, really, you know, going at them. But then it just, you know, just segues right into, and they keep going. So I really enjoy that show, mostly because it's the attitude of they know the environment that they're in. There isn't, I bet you probably 60-70% of the scenes has some gun on the wall in the back. You know, it's about them, the daughters out shooting pheasants, you know, for food and the feathers for their fashion designs. I mean, you know, it's just, you know, seriously, I mean, it's just, it's so out of place in today's, it's like that would be nothing 20, 30 years ago. Now is, oh my God, we thought we got rid of that culture. And it's just so emphasized and laser beam binoculared right now because it's so rare, or it's in this environment of we say whoever we is that that's bad and you're not allowed, and then they do it and do it funny and they're screwed. So I think you're right. The one thing that I was saying in the last hours is that since Trump's election, there are way more fireworks on New Year's Eve and 4th of July. The diminishment. We, a few years ago, several years ago, we were the only house on our entire street that had Christmas lights. And we had people would come up, oh, thank you for putting the Christmas lights. Oh, that was nice. They were really – now – it's just it's gone stupid again. You know, finally, and it, before it kind of got way too over commercialized or whatever, but now it's more a celebration. It's different, you know, and I'm digging it. All right, here we're going back.
Toot.lrn.fm.
There are those that just want to be left alone, and those that just won't leave them alone. Which one are you? The Ernest Hancock Show.
The culture is changing right in front of you. Culture. Doesn't matter what. $15 gazillion in media controlled by television commercials, NFL, military. You know what? They, them, those say on every channel of every sitcom of every. The people have kind of like, you know, pooey. You know? I spit you out. Well, this is happening, and it peaked. You know, the social justice warrior thing peaked a little bit too early, and with the Kavanaugh thing and the midterm elections and, you know, all of the successes. I mean, it certainly changed in different perspective around the world of the Trump administration without putting deadlines on anything. We got North and South Korea, you know, saying that the U.S. is what's holding them up. They go, ah, screw you. We'll just go clear some mines anyway. So, North and South Korea are going to be, you know, like they're, you know, and Leslie Stahl on from CBS, she's going, yeah, but he's bad, and you got in here the bad. We don't want to have peace in North Korea. Oh, and you never say anything bad about Putin. What about Putin? And he goes, yeah, Putin probably did. And China. You can't say China. We need a sound cut of you just saying Putin without the China thing, because we don't want to, you know, go up against China. We want to, you know, we don't want a trade war with China. We want you to say bad stuff about Putin for our news clip. Of God. You can sit there and see her trying to manufacture, you know, the little 5-second snippet of Leslie's going to get Trump to say something about what she wanted. And I'm going, wow.
Ernie, you know, this is led. I was going to bring this one up. This sounds a little petty. There is a new meme. And first off, Republicans, conservatives, and certainly libertarians, thank you, Davi. Wow, we got, you know, our side knows how to meme. And there's different discussions about why, probably because we can think more creatively. And there's, and that, you know, versus people on the left that are kind of hard-lined in one way of thinking. And that has led to a meme that's come out recently. Have you heard about, you know, we heard about SJWs, and I brought that up on your show a couple years ago. Now everyone talks about SJW. How SJWs have now, the new meme is they are now known as NPCs. Have you heard that?
No.
So this is all over.
What's NPC?
I'm going to tell you, and this is ticking off the left like no idea on online. So basically, somebody on 4chan about a few weeks ago made up this. They're having this discussion about SJWs, and he turned around. He says, "You know, they're not really SJWs. They're like non-player characters. You know, that's what an NPC. Any gamers out there? You know what I'm talking about. So it's like when you're playing a video game, and you guys know, some of you are gamers. You'll know this. Some of you aren't. Just I got to explain to them. So when you're playing a game and you're walking around these fake worlds, kind of like Grand Theft Auto or whatever, right? You're the character, and you can make choice. But when you run into these non-player characters, these are characters that the computer controls, and the computer gives them just certain guidelines of what to say. And so, of course, you're able to interact, and many times it makes sense. But then sometimes if you do something different, there's like this quirky attitude. Like it can't get off script. And so that's the idea, is that they're controlled by a higher brain and they can't think for themselves. And oh boy, is this meme taken off, NPC. And the left is melting down about how offended they are. And this, and that's the kicker.
Oh, they're worse. They're rubes. You know, I got to tell this story. When I was a kid and you watch Bugs Bunny, Looney Tunes, okay, remember? They used to be in, I don't know, 30s, 40s, whatever. They were the intro into movies at the theater. You would go in Looney Tunes where Bugs Bunny would do something that was, you know, like instead of watching previews or trailers for movies, you watched Looney Tunes. That's where you saw them. And then when television came, you know, they got on the television and Saturday mornings and I'm watching Looney Tunes. Well, what happened was it was a part card in there. He goes, what a rube. You're such a rube. A rube. I'm going, what the hell's a rube? Later on, and I'm an adult, not just a few years ago, I find out that rube referred to rhubarb. The people in the background, so that they had like chatter going, they'd have them stand there, look at each other while you're having the main characters doing whatever, to have this like crowd noise, all these off, you know, these secondary characters or fifth dairy, whatever, they're out in the background, and they go, rhubarb, rhubarb, rhubarb. No, rhubarb, rhubarb. That's all they say is rhubarb. They it gave that chatter, and the word helped with something. So they were just a bunch of rubes. They're just people back there, you know, chanting rhubarb. Well, that's what they're just there to go rhubarb. Whatever they tell them to say, and they just say it. In that case, it's rhubarb. In this case, it's S-A-W or something. With no real understanding of what the hell they're talking about. They're just there to fill space.
Which is exactly what most of us feel. Like, you're trying to have an in-depth conversation, or at least a debate, and you say that the sky's blue, and they come out and say, well, the sky's blue, and so, you know, you hate blue people, and, you know, identity. As we all know, every discussion gets diverted right back to this strange way of thinking, and sometimes you feel like you're from Mars, like you're not even having the same conversation.
So what's the answer? It goes down to individuals, even when they're talking about IQ of different races, or they're talking about propensity of blah blah blah, or they're doing. So I remember when Madden, you know, Madden football, Madden, he's a big football guy. He said something years ago about advantage that black athletes have because of some muscle thing or something. Boom!
Right.
He's off the air. They go, hell no! You can sell your video game, but you're not so not allowed to say any of that they have a physical advantage. I mean, they do or not, or I don't know. They don't even talk about whether they do or not. The fact that he even said it, I go, okay, well, do they? Nope, we're not even going to talk about it. So I'm going,
well,
that, you know,
exactly.
What?
This is the hypocrisy that's been created. I mean, and it started in some ways as a response back in the 70s. I mean, was it in the 70s where they'd say, you know, understandably, you know, there was the Black Panthers, and that led to black is beautiful. So people, I remember in the 70s as a child, you know, everyone wore T-shirts. Black is beautiful. You watch Good Times on television. Black is beautiful. But then again, if a white person says white is beautiful, you're an alt-right or racist, you know, head of the Klan. So how can you have that disparity, and yet our culture has forced that, this two-way of thinking, and it's turned into a modern form of McCarthyism. That is exactly what is happening, and the thing is, when you were in the 50s, they probably didn't realize how bad it was until later. This is McCarthyism 3.0.
Yeah, no, this is why it always goes down to individual. You know, this is where the libertarian, voluntarist, leave-me-alone-ist mentality of whatever is that you judge people by the content of their character. You judge them as individuals. And that's why when we do artificial intelligence spot we have for, I think it's the fourth letter, whatever. It's one of the letters, Captain Mark. And we're going, look, if we judge everybody as a collective, then an AI comes out and they judge us as a collective because, you know, somebody does something bad, this one guy, oh, all humans must die. And I go, if we don't start making it clear that we are ethically judging people as individuals, we can't expect that kind of return from other nations, other cultures, other. We're going, whoa, 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 whoa. This is what makes America different. We judge you as an individual. That's what this whole country is about. And they're trying to take that away from us. And the only argument that you can present or come back with, or that's time tested, true, and just in the back of your mind, you just see as legitimate way to evaluate people, is as individuals. And that's going to come back. The pendulum's going to come back to that for how long, we'll find out. But with the internet and information and people be able to share, this is all coming out. They're not, you know, which is why they had to turn off 800 channels on Facebook of these alternative media guys. That I know a lot of them. They're the good guys, and that's exactly what they had to target, good guys.
Yeah, no, absolutely. I mean, I think the silent majority has realized that what they thought they were being silent and understanding, that turned into them being silent. And the left took the silence as basically permission to keep doing it more and more. And so they've battered down 80%, we're realizing, probably even more, of this country. And I think people like us tend to be a little more louder. You know, you, myself, others. You know, I abhor political correctness. I've done my entire life. And, you know, people always tell me to be quiet and lower my voice and this sort of thing. But I've said it's the silent majority that is going to beget more silence. And we've allowed this to happen. So the silent majority is not now silent. That's the theme.
Yeah, it builds up. It always goes in waves. It's kind of, you know, what tyranny will society, you know, allow? I don't know, whatever they can put up with. You know, I asked Paul Rosenberg one time, I go, are we at peak tyranny? He goes, oh, no, but I think we're at peak obedience. And I'll,
when you hear...
Yeah, peak obedience. I mean, that really, I should say that more. It really had an impact on me. I'm going, God, we at peak? I mean, how bad does that have to go? Oh, no, it can get really bad. But I think we're at peak obedience. And this is one thing that L. Neil Smith would always put emphasis on. And recently when they did a bunch of gun stuff, he goes, yeah, I think Americans have obeyed their last gun restriction. And I think we're done. You know, we're not wouldn't be prudent at this juncture. So I get that impression. Donna, check the phone, will you? So I think, you know, it's interesting from my perspective, being old enough to see the wave, you know, to see how it, you know, it waxes and wanes and goes back and forth. And Trump is the result of this.
You know, right.
It's how this happened. Just tell us something. So I'm glad he's there. I'm glad this discussion is happening. I'm glad that, but you know, it does exactly what I was afraid it would do. It gives legitimacy to the system. And I'm like, we wouldn't have these problems without that concern.
And I, you know, we've hammered that. We'll talk about that, I'm sure, in the future. But the thing is, when people say, what has he done? You know, we all can claim what we think is the,
he's awakened the sleeper.
Well, yes, but remember, people thought, see, we all can pick what we think is more important, right? For the leftist, they might say it's the environment. You know, that's why maybe nothing else matters. This discussion and anything else doesn't matter, because if the world is dead, then it doesn't matter. It's sort of like, you know, better red than dead or better dead than red. Back in the 50s, we all agreed on what the problem was. It was the evil communists, right? It was the commies. What we didn't agree on was the solution. You know, the leftists believed that we could give ourselves up, at least we're still alive, better red than dead. And the people on the right were saying the opposite. I say, well, it doesn't matter if you're alive, if you're under the control of the state. And so therefore, we had different approaches to the problem, but we agreed on the problem. But since then, we truly have two different views of just reality. And that was another poll that's for some other time. Whereas the left believes it's basically the world is falling apart as far as the environment. And we sit back often and say that it's the economy, or the economy's stupid. So, you know, it doesn't matter if we don't have an economy. We don't have an economy. We don't have a country. And so that's where the Ron Paul, the Tea Party, all of this has been leading. But yet we have two different conversations, better dead than red or red dead, right, just over different issues. Well, now I think what both sides have realized is that it's the culture's broken, because the people on the left are like, wait a minute, don't you understand? The world is falling apart. The ice caps are melting, right? Ice caps are melting, and polar bears are dying, and all of this. How can the people on the right not understand science? It's because they're stupid, and we have to control them more in schools. We need to turn off talk radio. We need to limit YouTube. We need to censor. That's their solution, because they're that scared. They feel like they've lost the narrative because the world is dying. And yet people on the right, it's the opposite. People on the right, they're sitting back and saying, wait a minute, can't you guys understand, you know, the economy is falling apart and we're not going to have a country and we're going debt, debt, debt. You guys don't understand math. And so how is it you're not hearing it? And so I think both sides have realized that the culture is broken and they're looking for a solution. And Donald Trump comes in and he's sort of like, you know, the reawakening of this culture. And I think what the people on the right and independent voters, the silent majority, realized is that our culture is being eroded on two ends. One of the obvious, which is the illegal immigration issue. It's having so many people coming here, not assimilating, not knowing the language, not knowing our humor, not knowing our heritage. And that waters and dilutes our culture, and the left doesn't even seem to see it. So on the outside, we're being eroded, but we're also the culture being eroded from within.
And now, live from the studios of Freedom's Phoenix, Ernest Hancock.
Father, the sleeper has awakened!
From Dune! You know, the sleeper has awakened. Okay, I got that for you, Frank.
Yeah.
That was good, good. All right, well, this is, my whole thing is that it is always, and what I keep screaming about, it is a cultural thing. It's a culture battle. And that is definitely playing out right in front of us. And they aren't digging it, man. They're not digging it one bit. So I'm wondering what's going to happen. This is what's going on here. We are making the transition into the forever kiss my butt internet of they can't censor and they can suck it. So this is like today I'm doing a bunch of stuff. We have interest from some other networks that want to add on. We got different video that we can do and put it up, and we're doing interplanetary file system, IPFS. We could have our seeding computers that they can't censor it or take it out, and it replicates in different nodes we have around the world that people are going to sync up Freedom's Phoenix and our videos. Man, here we go. So I'm going to start bringing down the green screen here because I've been waiting for this. I don't want to do anything that they're going to, all that work had just gone, which is what's happened to so many people, just like the message that we have of decentralization and truth and an alternative leave me aloneism view, and they must strike it from the internet. Well, now it's getting to the point to where we can. And I'm going to need a movie buff like you to kind of help me with the scene here and there. And so we're going to have us some fun. Now, the thing is that what has changed, it's the culture. It is what they do not want you thinking a certain way, and if you do, you must be punished and pointed out and outed and shamed. Shame!
Like Kanye
shame!
West. Kanye, yep.
Kanye is like, your mama. So I am, it's changing, and it's going to, I hope that Trump and friends don't take this to the extreme and start trying to push, alt-right crap down your throat of we're going to whatever the hell, and they just get it down to the individual. So if the libertarians can keep it, you judge by individual and individual behavior and individual, and I get to be, individually, association of right to not associate. I choose not to associate with these guys, this group, these people, this age, this race, this whatever the hell it is, because I can.
Yeah, but the thing is, but not to go down this rabbit hole again, but just the fact that you can, the choice that you can do that is rooted in our culture of independence. And that's kind of the issue is that the left doesn't seem to identify with that. They don't care about individuality, of course, at all. And they have no problem with government controlling everyone.
They have a collectivist mindset.
Exactly. We're all NPCs anyway, according to them. So we're just part of this giant collective. So that is why the culture is so important. And I think it's more important than people we're really understanding. And we're still rooted in, it's about abortion. It's about even the Federal Reserve. God knows, I still am the Ron Paul guy. But you get to a point where you realize none of those issues matter if we can't even communicate. If we can't even communicate, the whole thing breaks down, which in some ways is kind of where you're seeing it as well, through technology and people just finding it on their own. And I certainly understand what your longer goal is, or what you see this evolution of technology and humanity going for the individual, hopefully better than the collective. And that's a big issue. That's what Freedom's Phoenix is all about, and I get that. But it seems like in the moment, it's we have to have a discussion again. We can't. We can't agree on the music. We can't agree on what TV shows that we're all watching. We can't agree even on the humor. We can't even watch even talk shows at night. And we certainly can't even agree on what the news is. And now we can't even agree on what the number one story is. Is it global warming? Is it the economy? Is it abortion? Is it whatever? So it's come down to the culture. We have to stop people from coming in, not because we don't like their race, because we have to have, it's like if you and Donna or your family, nothing personal, if you guys are fighting or something, and all of a sudden all the friends show up for a party, maybe it's not a good time for a party, right? Maybe we should give you guys time to whatever it is, just like our own personal lives, right? Sometimes you need to just sort your own crap out first before you have the neighbors over. And that's kind of what this country is doing, and not just here, but the rest of the world, because as I've said a number of times, and gosh, even my mother brought it up on the phone. Hey, Mom. But she brought it up that she's been hearing on her own sources. I don't know where she's hearing it about what I've talked about, that Hungary and what is it with Germany and Austria and Belgium. I mean, my God, I told you, Merkel in Germany, that whole European one world order Eurozone deal is just falling apart. Then you got Brexit. They are losing control around the world. This nationalistic cultural wave is everywhere. And Trump has been the person that stood up, took the arrows, and showed the world that if America can do it, then you guys all have cover as well. And he's been giving cover to many people, maybe in this audience as well, that, you know, are afraid to say certain things. And now, you know, you have you feel a little more walking a little taller that you can actually just say what you want to say. You know, we're not out there trying to offend people and put people in the back of the bus or all the scare tactics. It's just being able to speak, you know? It's funny. I one of the moments in my life, I'm going to give you a little secret moment. My family doesn't probably even know this, is that really ticked
me off.
Listen,
Mom, here it comes.
Here it comes. Just one of those little family things. I was like 7 years old, 8 years old, and I was with my grandmom, Pankowitz, and my Aunt Judy, so two Polish people, and we're at a diner. And they were just talking about, I don't know, the driver of the bus, and it was just something about, it was just some basic story. And my Aunt Judy asked, well, which driver or whatever, and it was a black gentleman. And all of a sudden, at the diner, as they're talking normally, right, like many people do, my Aunt Judy said, she lowered her voice, and she said, the black gentleman. The black, right? And she starts whispering. And I sat there and I'm like, I said, why are you whispering? And I kind of understood even at that age, but it angered me. It angered me so much at that time. I still remember it because I'm seeing people who are good people. I saw my family who I love, and I'm seeing them for the first time. I saw a sense of fear on their face, a sense of like, oh, probably what happened in the Soviet Union when people would lower their voice. I mean, that's what I saw in the 1980s Cold War movies, for God's sake. And when I saw that for my family, it stuck with me like a crawl, and it's led to this time where now I'm on the radio and I just yap and I just probably tick people off too. But I get that from my father. Hi, Dad. But anyway, but that's kind of where I think America has seen it. And Donald Trump has allowed America, the old America, Don Rickles America, the people that we all sit around and we can watch these TV shows and we can't even show them on television now. Hey, one last point. I'm now watching Mr. Rogers. I have a daughter now, a one-year-old, and so I'm getting back into Mr. Rogers. By the way, Fred Rogers was an awesome guy. I'm a whole other appreciation for Fred Rogers. Another story, but he does all the puppets too, and he does Lady Rothschild, I think her name is, or no, Lady Elaine. She's that kooky little puppet, and she calls everybody toots. She goes, "All right, toots," you know. Well, Mr. Rogers, I'm sitting there going, "Man, you can't even say that today."
I don't know if that'll make the movie or not. You know who's playing Mr. Rogers in the movie they're doing?
Tom Hanks. Right?
Tom Hanks. That's going to be interesting. You know, and the other thing, there's another movie I wanted to get. This is a political correctness thing gone crazy. First Man. First Man is about Neil Armstrong.
And it bombed. Yep.
Did it?
Yep, it bombed on top of all that, you know, all the controversy.
Well, they made a big deal out. It's great and what, you know, kind of got the reviews, and I'm going, maybe I'll go see it, take the kids, or I'll just wait until the DVD kind of whatever, because they don't show the planting of the American flag because that would be too something. And
yep.
I'm, what? You know, I it's gone way too far. And they missed it right when this comes out and all this political correctness crap is gone away. And they lost tens, if not hundreds of millions of dollars, you know. So it couldn't happen to a nicer bunch of people. But it's probably a good movie, and I might watch it later. Donna and I did watch Solo. When it got down to $3.99.
You turncoat.
I know.
You're a sellout.
So I'm going, all right, I watch it. But let me tell you, I watched it so you don't have to. Because you don't have to. You're not missing a damn thing. I was like, really? I mean, on so many levels, it was so lackluster. And they got Woody Harrelson, and they got, you know, other, I think Forrest Whitaker. I mean, it doesn't matter. I don't even remember. It was just so bad. I mean, bad. Just bad. As a movie, it's just bad. And all the stuff they were talking about that made it bad were just, whatever. But, no, it was bad. I mean, if you want, you know, just so you can say you watched all the Star Wars stuff, you know, like Rogue One didn't suck. I thought that was okay. Last Jedi sucked. Solo sucked. I mean, it sucked. So save the money, man.
Well, I mean, what they did was when Kathleen Kennedy took over Star Wars, she said the Force is female. It's not for men anymore. And she got rid of all the male writers, all the geeks who know Star Wars, and she hired, I'm not making this up, all women. and the head writers is a female lesbian black person who doesn't even really read Star Wars. It doesn't mean you can't, but I'm just saying, when you have somebody that is not even in the market or demographic of what you're selling, no wonder the stories are horrible.
I'm amazed. And where's Kennedy now? She's not there still, is she?
Oh, she is. She's under a rock. They all thought they'd can her on September, and it looks like she's still there, but no one has seen her in 6 months.
This is, it's changing. I mean, because the market drives every time.
I've been told.
Yep.
Yep, you're right. That's the end. That's kind of the capstone. It is the free market, and that's why I've been following this pop culture stuff, because we can sit there and argue what's right or not on the news, but at the end of the day, I knew that the Star Wars issue, the Marvel comics, that's what we talked about. The new Captain Marvel coming out, and the shift to SJW. That is where Disney and all of them are going to realize the economic version of the Donald Trump election. And you could blame Alex Jones and all you want, but when the young people are just are being repulsed by all this new crap from everything. By the way, your Star Trek, which I that's another one, all crap in my opinion. And they're already getting ready to cancel season 2 of Star Trek. Nobody even wants it. They can't even sell the show. So Star Trek, they've destroyed with SJW. Star Wars.
Hey, wait. They're it's not doing well. They're doing it with CBS Online. They want you to pay for it. They're using that as a leader for you to subscribe to their channel stuff, which I'm like,
the show's horrible, and there's a lot behind.
I like that.
Well, there's a lot. I don't want to get too much into the geeky stuff. It's like Paramount owns the movie rights to Star Trek, and CBS owns the TV rights. And then in order for them to do Paramount, they have to make it 30% different from the original series. And there's all this other crap I won't get into. But the thing is, they threw us SJW stuff. But here's the kicker. Netflix, now CBS All Access is how you get it here in America. The rest of the world, that you were able to get it through Netflix. They had a deal with Netflix. Netflix paid a bunch of money up front to pay for it. So CBS wouldn't lose money on it. They already guaranteed at least making the money back because of Netflix's deal. Of course, when it came out, although not only did nobody sign up for CBS All Access, or those that did, they canceled it after 30 days, but nobody watched it over the rest of the world. They just all got repelled by it. And so now when season 2 comes, there is no money from Netflix that they were counting on to pay for season 2. So now they have no money in it, and CBS All Access is not making any money on it. That's already a big
problem. Okay, now wait a minute. Give me the finances on that again. Start over. What? How are they making money? They're going to and didn't, and what?
Well, when CBS tried to sell this new Star Trek show, they just, they did what Kathleen Kennedy and Disney did with Star Wars. It says Star Wars on the label. Of course all the geeks are going to buy it. Don't worry about it. It's a sure thing. So they made this new Star Trek show. They ginned it up and made it completely non-Star Trek, but they just figured, who cares? The geeks are going to watch it anyway, and we're going to now get in the new SJW world, and they're going to sell it the way that we want. So they turn around and they say, okay, well, how are we going to pay for it? Well, we want to build up CBS All Access, because everyone's going online to streaming services, which I'm going to answer your question. But just yesterday, now that turned out, HBO is now going in with Time Warner. They're making their own cable access, their own online streaming service. They just announced yesterday, and the stock market went kooky on that with Netflix. So anyway, so we got another big actor along with the Disney Channel that's coming out soon. So everything's going online streaming on demand. Well, anyway, CBS already saw the writing on the wall. They came out with their own CBS All Access. Well, how do you get people to go and sign up for CBS All Access, right? I mean, what does CBS have? What is their library? Murder, She Wrote? Yeah, all these grandmas are going to sign up for CBS All Access to watch that. Old episodes of MASH or whatever. I mean, they have nothing. So the only thing they had in their library that was a draw was Star Trek. So they used that as the anchor. The problem is they didn't have a whole lot of money to make a brand new Star Trek movie or a whole new series to make it to that level. So they wanted to spread out the cost. So what they did was they went to Netflix and they said, hey, well, we'll have a deal with you. We are trying to get CBS All Access here in the States because most of their programming is American programming, right? CBS All Access is probably not going to work pretty well the rest of the world, but they want to build it up here. But the thing is, they need someone else to pay for the show. So what they did was they said, look, we'll make, let's, they went to Netflix. They said, look, we'll give you the exclusive rights to show the Star Trek series on Netflix around the world, so you guys can show it, But here in America, you can't show it on Netflix because, you know, you have to sign up for CBS. And that's what ticked off pretty much the whole geek community. And, of course, you don't tick off the geek community because anyone that really watches Star Trek knows how to get around a show that's on Netflix around the world. They know something called Torrent, right? I mean, so basically, the very people that they're trying to push out are the ones that are not going to pay for the service. But anyway.
Well, so I watched the first season on Kodi. You know, I got it for free because screw them. Because the thing is, I didn't mind, paying for individual or show or but they were like, no, you had at the time when it first started, the deal was is you had to join CBS Access. Like I need another freaking subscription to it. I go, no, because I already got my TV watching me. You know, I don't need them watching me while I'm watching Star Trek. So I don't want to watch it that bad. I don't care.
Well, no one is. I mean, and then you got YouTube Red. They tried doing their own. They had the Karate Kid sequel series, which, by the way, is fantastic. The Karate Kid redo on YouTube.
Cobra Kai.
That is that's how you should do a follow-up reboot, to be honest. But that's another story. But, yeah, no one's going to have enough money to pay for all these streaming services. So you're going to see, again, a big glut. And then just like all the dot-coms, and then they're all going to start getting flushed out. Netflix already, I mean, I'm telling you, Netflix days are numbered in a large way, I think, because they have no content. You notice on Netflix, they're losing everything because Disney's getting ready to take all their toys and go home to their channel. Every one of these streaming services is pulling their stuff off of Netflix, going somewhere else, just like with CBS.
Well,
like CBS.
Netflix, this is what I noticed. They have Netflix originals, and it is SJW everything.
It's SJW, including Obama, made a deal with Netflix. But also what they're doing is, since they have no money, they put billions of dollars about 5 years ago because they saw this happening. So about four or five years ago, they took billions of dollars and they put it into their own original programming. And by the way, the first show that they produced is your show, House of Cards. That was the first one that they did on their own. But anyway, they started doing their own stuff. The problem is that the shows that they're making haven't been that good. Like they made a thing with Will Smith about some like fantasy cop show or whatever. And the shows almost have like a made-for-TV vibe to them. And that's not what people want. I mean, they want first-run movies, and it has like a cheap kind of vibe. And so now they're realizing people are starting to lose interest in Netflix original programming, so they've gone to another level. And many of you might be noticing this, is that some of the shows, which are really good shows, but they're all foreign. So now they're just scouring the world looking for, you know, some Scandinavia version of Breaking Bad or something. And they just put all subtitles and they slap it up. Of course, Americans are pretty averse to foreign movies and foreign shows. But that's the bottom, I hate to call it bottom of the barrel because, you know, these are great shows, some of them. But that's what they're doing. All these shows from Korea and Poland. And I mean, that's Netflix now, or made for TV movies. So Netflix, if you guys have Netflix stock, I mean, I just say I wouldn't buy it or I would sell if I had it. But that's where Netflix is. So this whole market is being disrupted. CBS, just to finish up what you asked, they wound up making this deal with Netflix saying, look, you guys pay a bunch of money for Star Trek. You get the exclusive rights around the world. And, of course, Star Trek's going to make tons of money, and it's going to be a big draw because you at Netflix are losing all of your original programming. So how would you like to have Star Trek, the new Star Trek series? They said, great. And Netflix paid like an unprecedented amount of money to CBS to make that series. Of course, when it came out, just like when Star Wars came out and Todd McFarlane Toys and Toys R Us and all these stores were told that they had to buy all the Star Wars merchandise, you know, all the toys. They said, don't worry about it. We're going to make you buy all of these toys. But hey, it's Star Wars. We got Christmas coming up. Everyone loves Star Wars. You're going to sell this stuff like crazy. Don't worry about it. And then they all got stuck with tons of toys nobody wants. Toys R Us, it was part one of the reasons that it finally did in Toys R Us. It was just like the last, you know, straw on the camel's back for them. But that's what that happened with Star Trek. So all of this money that went to Netflix to pay for Star Trek, and nobody watched it. The Star Trek geeks, they hated it, and most of them, and maybe you liked it, but most of the geeks were repelled by it, of how they destroyed canon and the timeline and everything. And then the people in America just went around the system and got it, you know, online anyway. And so, therefore, CBS is a complete disaster. And the head of CBS, Les Moonves, he's the head of CBS, he just got canned. So I'm telling you, Ernie, it's fascinating. What you said at the end of the show is, I mean, I've been seeing it. I know what you're saying. You said it pointedly. You know, the free market will always win out. And that is what's happening. All this SJW, all this pandering, all this crap that they've been doing, it's all, I'm seeing it, Ernie, at the same time, like all under its own weight.
Well, I've seen this wax and wane over, I mean, I don't feel old, but I've been around long enough to see, you know, this stuff keeps coming up and going down and coming up and going down. And my experience has been this. As you can either create a need and fill it, or you fill a need that's already there. Well, what they're trying to do is the most difficult thing is they want to create a need. Buy Ronco, you need to have this opinion, this product, this thing, this thing. Why? Because we said you did. You don't have it. You know, you don't have, you need to have this. Now, if there's something like, you know, a better, more efficient gizmo gadget of a refrigerator, or I got, you know, longer lasting is going to do better and keep me safer Michelin tires or something, or I got, you know, whatever claim they're making. Usually it's about something that's going, something I already use or need, and it does it better. This gasoline cleans your injectors. This thing does whatever. But a lot of this stuff is you need this gizmo gadget for, because you need the gizmo gadget because it's this color or something. I mean, I that is what I see with this cultural shift in what is and is not important as an opinion you're supposed to have, and they're going to beat you over the head with it on something that may not even affect you. So I'm going, I those don't last. When you see they call them fads. I mean, you know, so fads come and go, and SJW, this way of thinking, is a fad, but with what payoff? How are you better off for judging people by their disability or what they, not what they can do, but what they can't do? You know, by the, you're supposed to have some value because of your weakness. So it's like my father, he was proud of all the freaking prescription drugs he had. Look at my suitcase. I must be important. My disability, my weakness, my pain, my illness gives me value because, you know, you're supposed to feel sorry for me or something. I'm like, wow, there's no incentive for them to get off them, or, you know, turn, anybody does anything. Oh, I got to go marijuana. They go, I got the marijuana. You know, I need to have, I got, you know, probably marijuana. You know, marijuana. You know, is it really marijuana is going to cure? You know, that's not the point. I'm going, I just want, in their head, they go, why do you do that? I go, because there's so much crap that they're having you do, where if you just ate, you know, a freaking salad, or just didn't eat for 3 days, do the biblical fast or something, or you just, you know, ate some marijuana or hell, CBD or something, you know, get off of this dependency of they got something for you and you're supposed to feel better about yourself because you got some product that they said that makes you, I don't know, your value goes up because you're an invalid or something. I'm like, what the hell kind of goal? I don't see that you need to go bashing on somebody less of a human being because they're sick or something. That's not the point. But you don't get brownie points. You don't get stripes. You don't get, you know, discounts. All those in a wheelchair get a parking space, you know? Well, mandated by the government. So I'm going, what? All right, I give you a perfect example. My 6-year-old granddaughter, she wants to go out. You know, I take kids out on dates or outings, and we go out. And the week before, did a little brother, and she's, you know, pick me. So we went and saw Smallfoot. It's an animation about Yeti, you know, makes friends with humans or whatever. So it was a pretty good film. I enjoyed it. So we go and we sit, and good seats. We're right before the movie starts. And you had way back in the back row, or they had handicap seats, and, you know, one handicap and then the other something like that, and a nice lounge. I go, well, yeah, those are blank. We'll pick that one. I go, yeah, I limp. And, yeah, whatever. They didn't care. You know, so they give us a handicap seat. So nobody's going to sit there. They got two or three others there in case somebody comes late, and they're just going to waste that good seat, you know, and because somebody, I go, look, man, I'll take it. And they don't care. If anybody asks, they just give it to them, you know. But I'm just going, this mindset that, no, I should suffer through this movie and watch these empty seats up there because they're reserved for somebody that's not using them. You see my point? I'm just like, yeah. I hate this illogic. It's just crap. Now, Pat Schwinn from the Breakfast Club. He's our token liberal, man. He just got him, freaking
Pat
hate.
The brave man. I give him credit. Yeah, the brave man.
I hate Trump and hating everything and social justice.
I love. We all love Pat.
Okay, now this is the one thing. For a year or two, he just finally got went to trial and got a not guilty. And this was the deal. They had video footage of a guy hitting him. Okay? He struck first, but this is what started it. It was a black guy, which he definitely wants to bring up. A black guy goes in and parked in a handicap spot. Well, here comes Pat. He would not let it go. You will move that. And it got to where he was in his face. He would not go. He wouldn't just make a statement and move along. No, he had to get him to move that spot to the point he provoked the guy, finally pushed him. He was in his face after 5-10 minutes, and it was a, ouch, quit it thing. Pat wasn't going to let it go. Finally, it goes, they charged him with the assault, and then it goes in, finally the judge just goes, yeah, not guilty, get out of my face, and you're done. A year and a half, because he just is going to get some on this. I can see where, a lot of people get upset if it's denying them access or they're not. I can see, but it's mandated by the government on my property of my strip center or my store that I'm mandated to have, all this stuff. Well, it's a good business decision. Have one, please. And if they don't, whatever. I'm not going to get all freaked out about it. But to mandate it, and that it's always there, that you're rewarded for being disabled. Well, you want to make, the world a better place and kind of in the voluntary thing. But to mandate it and then reward disability, when you reward disability, illness, sloth, not working, overweight, unhealthy, all these things that, are not necessarily to be aspired to, when you reward it, guess what happens? You get more. And I'm going, aren't you against this kind of stuff happening to people? Oh, yeah, absolutely. But we want to reward or make life easier for them. I'm going, then you just make it more prominent. You get more of what you subsidize, and you're subsidizing this stuff.
Yep.
So does that make me cruel or bad? Or I'm going, according to them, but I mean, society, I don't think, is better off by mandating accommodation of disability. It's a man. I don't think it might be a good business decision. It might be, but some places you don't have to, and they're all government. The government doesn't have to have the ramp. The government doesn't have to have the right bathroom. The government does. This is prominent everywhere. Say, yeah, well, it'd be too expensive for us, but we can sure as hell make you do it. And I'm just like, when I built my restaurant, the bathrooms had to be a certain size. We had to, I didn't make a big deal out of it. What's the, okay, fine. I needed more room anyway. I don't care, but it was just the mandate. And I'm thinking, when I was doing original tenant improvements on that, it was easier for me. But I know if I had already had it built and somebody came in, I got to spend thousands of dollars more to redo this thing. That could be a deal killer, man. That could be a business killer, and which has happened to a lot of people. We have to go away from quit subsidizing bad. It's okay to be whatever it is, because we're going to subsidize it and you get a program. And I'm not.
Right. Well, the thing is, what's come down to, it's along the same lines, is not to subsidize it, but also for Americans to get to a point where they can say no. Because many of these things happen where, you've got like a committee, some kind of committee, and people are sitting around, and usually someone on the left has some great idea of, wouldn't it be nice if we could blah, 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 fill in the blank, or to help this group, that group. And of course, then people in the rest of the group, they'll feel like, well, I don't want to be called a racist, bigot, homophobe, NPC kind of fill in the blank. And so therefore, the silent majority says, well, I don't want to be called intolerant. So, okay, fine. And then if no one argues, then the 80% of people who hate PC and everything goes with it shut down, and the 10-20%, as my mother says, the squeaky wheel gets the oil. Some of you guys say grease, but the squeaky wheel wins, and that is what's happening. So it tends to be, and that's a deeper discussion. I'm curious. I mean, is it genetic? Is it just how it's cultural? Is it just loud people? It's maybe people on the left who tend to be loud. They get all of not just the attention, but they also have been given a blank check. Because we've essentially sat back and said, we don't want any problems here. It's like extortion. It's been protection money from the mob that, hey, you know, I don't want to be called any names, so I'll give whatever this loud leftist liberal wants at some committee, whatever they want. And that leads to another regulation, and your bathroom has to be a certain thing, and you have to have an elevator in your tiny little office that bankrupts your company, and you got to blah, 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 blah. And that is what's constrained the economy, our freedoms, all at once. Exactly right.
Well, what do you think is appropriate? You know, what is appropriate, you know, accommodation? You know, what is appropriate? See, that's, you know, it's putting guns to people's head to make them pay for somebody else's anything. That just seemed, that's the problem. That's the attitude. But you can't get a consistent response from even Trump or Trump administration or Republicans or anybody. They're still going to, you know, want to force you to do what they want. And until they stop forcing you, it's not going to, you're never going to get to this because, oh, we need to have all that money we took you from you with the 45 to your forehead to bomb over here and then spend it over here on the, you know, baby hospitals or something. And I'm,
yeah, go ahead.
No, I mean, that's my point. You know, there's no principle.
Well, and this is where the world of freedom and culture come hand in hand. And it's a real slippery slope, too, when you start looking at multiculturalism and we're all just the same. But I have to use an example that I know very well, which is from Japan. You know, for you new listeners, I went to college in Japan. I lived there quite a while. I lived with the Buddhists there, and it's kind of my second world. But, you know, in Japan, they're all the same. I mean, the Japanese, they look at themselves as one group. They're, sometimes we mockingly talk about them or they themselves as the Borg, you know. They're like one collective. But the thing is, they don't do it out of succumbing their own individuality. Their individuality is wrapped up in being Japanese. They're extremely proud of being Japanese. And it's something that Americans can't even fathom because we're such individuals. They can't understand our individual views. Matter of fact, when, you know, we'll teach kids how to play by themselves. And in Japan, it's all about community. It's like every single game is about doing things as a group, and that you couldn't cut off your nose, you couldn't cut off your arm, you would lose part of being part of the group. And so what I'm getting to, though, is there is a strength in a sense of community, because when you all think a certain way, and I know that sounds kind of a little abhorrent as libertarians, but just imagine we're all amongst libertarians. We all sort of agree in certain cultural things and such. But the more you have in common, what I'm getting to, is the more that you can automatically agree to, and you don't need rules, regulations, and a gun to your head to do something different. And that is why nationalism, or let's just say culturalism, and loving one's culture is not racist, but it's also important. You need to identify a culture first, which Americans don't seem to get, and you and I have had discussions about that, you know, itself. But we do have a culture. We're losing it. But every country has a culture, and the more you refine the culture, and we have to be careful about refining a culture to all of a sudden becoming the Third Reich. I mean, that's not what I'm talking about. That's the slippery slope, of course. You got to watch when that culture becomes so nationalized and they think that they're better than everyone. They got to take them all over. That's what Donald Trump, President Trump.
No, everybody does. Now, their culture. This is my point. If America didn't exist, we would dream of her. And what would we be dreaming of? What makes America? It was the purpose of government to defend individual rights to be left alone. You know, we're our whole purpose is we're going to defend our borders from anyone that wants to like take you over and make sure you gotta and you must and whatever the hell. Or you have the concept and the idea that you can do whatever you want as long as it doesn't bother anybody and, you know, we're done. So I'm going, okay, well, this whole concept is what makes America so great, is the ability for individuals to do whatever they want, the pursuit of their own happiness. And then what happens? Whatever they want. You know what they produce is theirs, and as long as they're not in conflict with somebody else's pursuit of happiness, you're not violating their right. That was be done. But when you have all these individual sovereigns, individual people that are doing what they want, well, then what do you not have? You don't have centralized collective control. And then you have the invasion from outside is that kind of control. They come in and they go, well, we want to make you all Muslim, you infidels. We want to make you all socialist, you capitalists. We want to make you all this, you that. I mean, whatever it is, they're going to try, and they'll go into the education realm. They buy up all the media. They control all the government positions. They take more of your tax money. They got more fees of blah, blah. We had the electric guy out here, and he's going, I don't believe your bill's right. You're doing the mining stuff. He's like, this is jacked up. My fee, this is 600 bucks a what? And I go, because they're not fees. They're taxes. It's you thought you got a fee is going to be a set amount. No, it's based on the bill. They're lying. Well, the people, they look at this stuff, and they're going, wow, this is like not fair, right? I'm like, yeah. This attitude, this opinion.
Well, look, Ernie, I completely agree with what you're saying, and I'm just looking at it from a different perspective. Further, I'll give you an example. My better half, she comes from a Sikh family, and her father was a very prominent Sikh, and they wear turbans, and he also worked on construction sites, and he was very proud. I remember telling me how he was able to go to construction sites and not wear a hard hat because of his religious principles. He would wear a turban, and he also believed that the turban, it protected his head anyway spiritually, and that's a spiritual belief. But the thing is, he actually was able to trump the OSHA rules based off of religious preference because he had a turban, right? And so the thing is, if everyone, I'm not saying everyone has to be a Christian here. I'm just saying that if everyone has a certain belief system we might think we're individual. It's sort of like Christians all argue between the Mormons and Jehovah's Witness and the Baptists, and everyone argues about whatever line in the Bible. But if you talk to a Buddhist, you guys are all the same, And so it, in a sense, though, the more you're similar culturally, then you don't have to sit there and say, oh, okay, well, now we got an OSHA rule. And that's one law, but now this person gets to supersede that law because of this religious thing, because he's so different over here. And if he can do something different, then why can't I do something different? And then the whole thing gets blown away. And you might say, well, it's individuality, but now you've got that conflict of how individual rights versus a collective. And I know ultimately individual rights are paramount, especially for this audience and myself, but I'm just saying those individual rights come from ultimately a culture that focuses on individuality, which we often miss.
Yeah. And what is that culture? Trump does not represent that culture.
You don't think so?
No. He's going to, he's going to bomb here. He's going to take your money there. He's going to redistribute it there. And I will be better.
Oh, all right. I don't get that. I disagree, but that's just.
Well, I see, that was my concern. There's not going to be, or hopefully he'll get to that point, maybe in the, pinky swear, give me a second term and then we'll fix it. But, if it ever gets down to, government shouldn't be doing, certainly from a federal level, education. Government shouldn't be doing blah, blah, blah. Government shouldn't be taking your income tax. Government shouldn't be.
This is an absurdist thing.
That's absurd? Doing away with the education department?
Hear me out. If Dr. Ron Paul became president, and if he was not able to successfully go in on day one, snap his fingers, and basically eradicate all departments of government, all the troops back on the first day, and get rid of the Federal Reserve on day one, if he couldn't do that on day one, God forbid, are you going to say that he now is a sellout to the system and he's not really for individual liberty? I mean, come on, Ernie.
Dr. No ever voted for a tax increase, ever voted for a right violation, blah, 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 blah. That's why they called him Dr. No. He'd sit there and argue about whatever and make the bill better, and they'd do whatever, and then he'd vote no. So I can't imagine that Dr. Ron Paul, as President of the United States of America, would sign a document putting into law more restrictions on the individual. I don't see that. I don't think he can physically do it.
Yeah.
Trade it off. So that's what I'm waiting for. This is what I think is going to shock people. Trump has broken the U.S. mold on what is and is not possible. Now, of course, he had money and, you know, support. Well, all these other guys that got money and support, Bloomberg and fill in the blank with 15 billion other people are going to come in with a bunch of money, and I'm going to show you how to do it. Well, they're going to come up against half the population that are, you know, head down, plow, freaking hell no, that, and like you say, this political correctness thing is gone, which is what they're trying to play off of. It's gone. It's not ascending anymore. It peaked already, and it's going down right before the midterms. So yep. I'm going to be – see, I hate to make any kind of prediction because I don't trust the system. So I would suspect that the midterm elections are all about motivated voters to get their butt out there and actually do something. I don't see the left as inspiring anybody, even left-leaning people to kind of – they're just – not motivated for the right reason to get off their ass and go do something, but they want to make it easy with mail-in voting, just send it in. They probably get bombarded with all kinds of crap to fill out this, and here's the list, and send it. And then you have the motivated people on the right, and they go, ooh, man, we go Trump, 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 Trump. It may be, I would suspect it would be overwhelming in favor of Trump, but I don't trust the system. And, you know, and I'm not really into that.
Well, you got to trust it some, because Trump's in the damn White House right now.
That's why. You know, he may have overwhelmed it, or they, you know, they
but
see
it
that
still
this
exists enough that that was possible. That was our argument all along.
And it may have been part of the program. I don't know. They haven't convinced me it's valid, and I know too much about it. It is not. They can't. There's so many. I'm not getting sucked in.
No one who listens to the show is that obtuse to think the system is definitely leaning towards us. It is certainly weighted toward the House, like in Vegas. The question is to what degree. And you know, for a lot of us, we thought it was 100%. That basically, you know, the Rothschilds and the Bilderbergs, they come in, they say basically, we're going to read you the Riot Act. This is how it's going to go.
Well,
clearly,
we got double zeros.
Somebody didn't tell Donald Trump that because he did his own thing, and somehow he pulled it off. And we, in witness to the whole world, we saw the system attack him. They threw everything at him, even maybe things behind the scenes, and he's still standing there. So to some degree, as much as I know it undermines many of the concepts that we talk, including myself, about how broken the system is, but in some ways, I mean, sometimes you have to stand back and say, maybe it's
no, you always got to stand back and be entertained.
The fact that it's not so corrupt that the people still have somewhat of a voice. I know about the corruption, and God knows you've done many, all sorts of great talks about it, about how you, I think you said, and you don't, we don't have to go into the story, but you think you went into the back alleyway and you went into the trash cans and you found all like the polls or the votes or something. I mean, there's all kinds of things of the corruption.
No, the early ballot requests.
Early ballots.
That would send in only after they interviewed, and if you were going to pick the right person they want, then they forwarded it to the government to get your early ballot. If you didn't choose correctly, they threw it in the trash, and it was them, the parties, that sent it to you to begin with. And I'm going, wow, this is when it first started.
And then, what was the name of that video you always talk about? The one was done in Tucson.
Fatally Flawed.
Fatally Flawed. I mean, I've definitely watching that. I'm sure you have that on Freedom's Phoenix permanently. So there's, I mean, this stuff is out there. I'm not in any way saying it doesn't.
No, nope, but it's deleted on YouTube. Gone.
Really?
I don't know. I mean, you know, whenever it, you know, this stuff is, this is how and why they control the narrative.
Yeah.
You know, the victors get to write the history. Well, who are the victors? The guys that own.
Well, that's the thing. Trump president, and we're not. So the thing is, there's some, at least we have to acknowledge and maybe celebrate, even as libertarians, as cynical as we are, and no one's more cynical about the system than we are. When you're a third party and you've not had even one shot at the apple because the system's that damn corrupt. No wonder it breeds so much contempt for the system for people like ourselves.
You know, I give you this. You know, Frank was the guy, and he, you know, the Trump report, man. He pegged this from the beginning. Because I'm like, you know, it's going to be Hillary or Bush, man. We're going to go, you know, my man Bush. Here we go. Jib. Well, Jib. He didn't get it. And how he didn't get it was Trump did something that they never anticipated that he would do and be successful with. He just slapped him upside the head every chance he got. Just calling him just causing controversy. I'm willing to call him a freaking small-handed, small-minded, small-footed scumbags. You know, you don't want to? Yeah, and what's Horseface over here got to say? I mean, you know, it was just amazing that he did that and got away with it. And now, right before the midterm, who's going to Africa? Melania. You know, and one thing they haven't done where she wore that jacket, you know, I just don't care. Do you? You know, and she wore that jacket, and her answer to that was, and they're waiting until after most of the early voting is done, and then they'll show Melania maybe later if we feel like it. I mean, they're not releasing a lot of the coverage that they're getting, and certainly they don't want to put a positive spin on it. It's like North and South Korea are, you know, bucking the U.S. media. You know, going, can't we? You know, screw you guys. We're just going to go ahead and just remove landmines. We'll take care of this. We'll have a high speed rail system between the two capitals before you guys even acknowledge it. You know, screw you. And so I'm good. You know, the hell with it. But they'll try and instigate something, and they don't want. It was obvious CBS did not want to have any kind of negative ways with China. They weren't focused on Russia. So anything that China comes out doing all this stuff, he mentions China. No, don't want to talk about China. Why? It's worse than Russia. Why are you guys? Well, because they like because they're our partners and buddies, and we have the something. I don't know what the hell the reason was, but it outed them, and they don't even see it. They don't even see it. You know, they'll come out and talk about this, about that, and everybody's going, they think they're making their case or something? I mean, because they're so far behind the wall that they don't even see what the rest of us see. They can't. They're like the architect in the Matrix. They can't see it.
Absolutely, Ernie. You know, this is kind of a little tangential to your point, but there was something I saw on the I know it's Fox, but Greg Gutfeld's show. That's their version of late night TV now instead of the Kimmel. It's a pretty fun show, actually. It kind of decompresses.
Is it done like
humor.
A talk late night talk show? Or
yeah,
something?
It is. He's got like a panel on there, and it's, you know, it's the one time you realize that conservatives can just sit back and just laugh. Like, we have our own private show. It's like our own little club that they can sit there and just talk about the news of the day and, you know, make fun of the liberals.
And what's the name of the show?
It's called I think it's the Greg Gutfeld Show. He's the guy that's on the Five talk show every day, but at night. It's like, I don't know, it's like at 11 o'clock, 10 o'clock at night or something like that. It's like the late night talk show. But it's about politics. And I never really cared for it before, but being that we're so immersed in it 24/7, having a show where you can just kind of laugh, and not just laugh at liberals.
Oh, that guy. I see him. I don't like that guy.
Exactly. I didn't really care for much, but he grows on you. But the thing is, it's not just laughing at liberals, which is like it's like you just assume that. But it's laughing and celebrating Donald Trump, meaning that he puts his foot in his ass half the time, or his mouth, however you want to look at it. I mean, Trump is doing things. You just have to sit back and just laugh at the absurdity of what we're living through.
All right, well, here, I pulled up one of the clips. Let's just listen to it real quick and see what he has to say, because, you know.
All right, so the news seems pretty good, if you ask me. You got a booming economy, unemployment still dropping, a new Supreme Court judge who can actually stay awake. Peace is breaking out in the Koreas. An American pastor is released from Turkey. And I just saw Michael Avenatti downtown selling pencils. He's so adorable in cardboard shorts. Yep, in 2 years, Trump solved more headaches than a boatload of Bufferin. So what are the polls saying? And should you believe them?
I believe in polls. Only the ones that have us up, because they're the only honest.
All right, I get it. It's just, you know, doing Sean Hannity with a laugh track, I guess.
Well, no, I wasn't trying to just plug the show. What I was trying to bring up, though, is because I couldn't find a clip of it.
That they could have one.
Yeah, well, look, I don't normally bring up this show because it's not really newsworthy. It's just sort of, and I have to say, I just find myself laughing on occasion because things have been so serious and our own lives are so intense. But one of the guys that's the commentator, one of the guests he has on there, his name's Tyrus. He just goes by one name, Tyrus. He's this huge guy. He looks like half Muslim, half black or something, but he's just a real cool, laid-back guy, and he has his own giant chair. He's so big. And anyway, he comes from the wrestling world. And, you know, I don't, you know, anyway, he does these comments. Well, the other day they were talking about the left media and how they're going into breakdown mode. And they were talking about Jim Acosta's, right, who's on CNN. He's kind of taken on the mantle as the patron saint head guy that's representing the entire leftist media. You know, between MSNBC and CNN, they each have their own people, of course. They have Chris Cuomo. You know, he's another one. But Jim Acosta, he's the main journalist that's at the White House briefing. So whenever Huckabee Sanders is having a press conference, you know, basically Jim Acosta is like the head guy that everyone yields to and to take on the Trump administration. And he's the one that's all that he's often at the Trump rallies. And when they're all saying CNN sucks, CNN sucks, you know, Jim Acosta is just sitting there and he's just showing how, you know, how scary and racist and bigoted the Trump people are. Anyway, they were commenting about Trump going to all these rallies. Like, you know, he's sitting there changing the world every day more than any other president. And then when he gets done, instead of going to dinner, he sits there and he has another rally for thousands of people. And this is what he does every day. This is the life of Trump. Now, the thing is, they were talking about this, and Tyrus, all of a sudden, he says, look, he goes, let me explain what's going on in dynamic. He goes, I don't even know if CNN knows that they're doing it. He said, Donald Trump has had a very long history with professional wrestling, right? He's personal friends with the McMahons. After all, he put Vince McMahon's wife in as a cabinet member, for God's sake, right? Linda McMahon, who actually ran against Peter Schiff for Senate a number of years ago. So he knows the McMahons, not to mention that famous meme where he goes and he beats up Vince McMahon on TV. Remember, he actually did
that.
Yeah,
so it was who's going to shave their head, yeah.
Exactly, right. And then, of course, then they did a little meme. They put the CNN icon over Vince McMahon, and Trump's beating the crap out of him, and the left went ballistic, right? So this is Donald Trump. So he understands wrestling. He understands the dynamic. And what Tyrus was saying, who's a wrestler himself, he goes, look, he's taking it from the class 101 rule book of Vince McMahon, every single thing of wrestling. He said, just think about it. Trump puts himself up on stage. It's almost like a ring. You see all the people around him, and they're organized almost like you see the people behind on a wrestling match, right? You see all the people standing up in the bleachers. So he has them all arranged the same way. And then across across the entire theater, you've got the bad guy, right? You've got the villain that's called in wrestling terms the heel. And of course, Donald Trump knows that in wrestling, when you're Hulk Hogan or whatever, you're known as the baby face. This is wrestling terminology. So he knows he's playing the baby face. And Jim Acosta is playing basically like Rowdy Roddy Piper. And he's on the other end. And they said John Acosta's, he, whether he knows it or not, he's being fooled into this role.
Because he's playing it good, too.
Exactly. And Jim Acosta he wants his own notoriety as well, because he's getting, you know, he's actually part of the news now. And so now he puts himself up. Think about it. You've got all the CNN cameras, and Jim Acosta isn't just demure hiding behind the cameras. He stands on stage on a raised pillar by the cameras. And Jim Acosta stands up so the entire crowd can see him. And he's like, look at these evil Trump voters. And Trump sits there and looks back and says, look at those fake news. And the audience is going, you know, just like wrestling. Hulk Hogan says WrestleMania. And all the crowd, they already know what to say. Granted, they're going to say they're all NPCs. But, you know, it's like they're playing this. He's playing the role of wrestling. Now, I know it's kind of obvious to some degree, but to hear how Tyrus explained it was a great clip. Of really how he's pulled it right out of the rule book. I mean, he's correct. It's like we're playing these characters, and that's what they've got themselves falling into. And in wrestling, you know, the baby face always wins the crowd, and that's what Trump's been doing.
You know, that's what it is. It's like, you know, who's going to get the crowd, and they don't understand. It's just, it's entertainment. It's opinion, while CNN just keeps playing into being the bad guy. Yeah. You know, it's like they're helping. You don't even got to do it, you know? This is this is one of the articles at the top of Freedom's Phoenix right now. The graphic is vote, choose your puppet. Puppet on the left, puppet on the right. You know, and then, of course, disclaimer, if voting could truly change the system, it would be illegal. Now, the article is by the organic prepper, Daisy Luther. She's on Lou Rockwell a lot, the opinion, but she's kind of a prepper person. But it goes, the people stopping election interference are the ones who are actually rigging the elections. Ironically, many of the pages that were shut down had absolutely, you know, they were talking about Facebook and all and YouTube and all that stuff. Many of the pages that were shut down had absolutely nothing to do with politics or elections, unless you include the fact that they recommended skipping the entire circus. We'd definitely be there. None of these pages were accused of being the Russians, who were the scapegoat of the last surprise presidential election results. A couple of the things that many of the pages did have in common, incidentally, were an anti-war outlook and a police watchdog mentality. But as far as making the election more resistant to interference, the result of the alternative media purge is the diametric opposite. People will now only get one side of the story. The alternative media changed everything during the last presidential election. When Donald Trump announced his candidacy for president, much of the world snickered. Who was this reality television star to take on part of the Clinton empire? There was no way, people scoffed, that Trump could possibly win. It's a proven fact that Hillary Clinton was in cahoots with the mainstream media throughout her candidacy. And the reason it's proven is that organizations like WikiLeaks released the evidence of it in a series of emails with her campaign manager and people like Donna Brazile of CNN. Brazile finally publicly admitted that she'd done so and that it was her job to make all our Democratic candidates look good. The alternative media jumped on this story, as well as many other questionable emails that were divulged by WikiLeaks, while the mainstream pretended that none of this was happening. And the mainstream did very little to cover the Democratic National Convention, during which the nomination was stolen from Bernie Sanders, who, if we're being honest, probably would have had a much better chance of beating Trump than the notoriously unlikable Clinton. Here's my coverage of it at that time with the link. The alternative media, never a fan of the goings-on in Clinton land, from the Haiti scandal all the way back to the suicide of Vince Foster in Arkansas, jumped on these stories, as well as stories about her debatable health. The fact that we had a robust alternative media at the time meant that these stories were heard. At the same time, the mainstream media was busy painting Donald Trump as a neo-Nazi fascist who hated minorities and would nuke somebody the day he got in the office. Now imagine there had been no alternative media during that election. If we hadn't have had an alternative media telling other stories, enough stories that people were able to get a fuller picture of who both of these candidates really were, things might have turned out entirely differently. And while that would be all right with any number of people who loathe Donald Trump, would it have been a fair election? And you go back to, they're talking about the candidacy of Congressman Ron Paul in 12. Dr. Paul was an incredible candidate with a glowing political resume, but he didn't get the time of day. There was a media blackout on his candidacy, and finally he was forced to withdraw from the race. Many of us were budding alternative journalists at the time, learning a valuable lesson during that election. What we were doing was important. There needed to be an option instead of letting the mainstream media present the only options and information to people. By the time the 16 election rolled out around, those disappointed in how Dr. Paul was treated were determined that it would not happen again, that a candidate with a background full of sordid scandals would not get through an election cycle unscathed, painted as a glowing Madonna who would save us all. It's the alternative media that did this, you know, Frank, and I'm telling you, that's why they had to shut these particular shows down, because they went and looked at their network. They wanted to see the pirate network. They wanted to see where they came from. They wanted to see how they proliferated. They wanted to see where, you know, Facebook, they got all this information. And then what they do? They go, this one, gotta die. And they just turned them off because they were last-ditch effort going in the midterm elections. They're getting their butt kicked. And they didn't think that by doing that, it was going to solidify. They didn't have a choice. They go, we got to do something. So they did what they could do. They censored. So how is that going to play out in this midterm, which people are starting to vote right now, Frank? Where are we at? What do you think is going to happen?
Well, I think that basically the blue wave, either the red wave is really going to take off, and I do think that's coming. I think it's a combination, really. I think the red wave is there. Is it going to decimate by itself? Probably not, but it's a combination of the red wave taking off, of I think Americans feeling like they're just taking their identity back, and they realize that this is more than just, you know, Republicans. It's, you've got many never Trumpers and independents, and people realizing after seeing the left go crazy, that maybe not just 20% of the politically correct, but the far, you know, we're talking like maybe 1%, 5% of the far leftists are controlling the narrative with everything. And when they saw that video, you know, the video that really angers, I think, a lot of the centrist Americans is when they saw the leftist at the Kavanaugh when he was getting sworn in, and they were all in that giant brown door, you know, the wood door. I think they're at the Senate, the judicial building, and you remember that video, and you see the leftist just crying and screaming and clawing at the door. I mean, that is. I mean, to maybe many of us, it's not a big deal. It's like another day in the life of what we see at the crazy America. But I think for a lot of centrists, they're realizing these are the people that are telling them to vote their way. These are the people that have dominated and told us to whisper and not to say certain things. And, you know, Ernie, there's another component to this that I think you and I and some in our audience really forget and miss. And I have to remind myself all the time as well. And that is how significant it is that we, including Donna, that we are self-employed. I cannot imagine, when I talk to people, I'm sure you know too, Ernie, people that work at 9-to-5 cubicle jobs, and as some of you, many of you probably do as well, and I know how frustrating it must be. There's no way, I have to say, I think many libertarians can't even handle those jobs. We just have to do our own because we're just too independent thinking. But some of us still are in those jobs. And to be in a job where, you know, you're afraid, literally afraid for your job. I mean, for us, we have the liberty of this radio and just saying whatever. But imagine every single day, and you got to watch what's on your Facebook and watch what you do, because if a coworker sees it, and if your boss is a leftist, or everyone's afraid. After all, you saw what happened to Roseanne, you know, Roseanne Barr, just one slip that's taken out of context, and then the rabble goes all after you, and you're canned even from a multi-million-dollar gig, even if it, you know, if it destroyed their ratings, because it's so hypersensitive. And we got to that point with Roseanne. I think that was like a turning point as well, along with Kavanaugh. And, you know, there's many of these factors. But I think that's a component that many Americans are feeling that's brewing even more than what we have, because we have an exhaust valve or escape valve that we throw our emotions through, especially you with this show. I can only imagine what you'd be home with at home, like around Donna, without this radio show.
That's what a lot of people, you know, certainly when I was on radio stations here, they tried to get me to sign different things. They wanted the archive. They wanted, you know, they wanted the control because it was having an impact on electoral politics. I was the Facebook pages that they did. Here in the Valley, you have a morning show and the afternoon drive that I was doing at one time and all that. And they're like, oh, hell no, we got to purge them. We're not going to market them. We're not going to have advertising. We're not. But that's changing. There's some prominent networks right now. Matter of fact, when we get done with the show and editing and everything this afternoon, I got to write a big proposal of whatever, so we may be expanding the show. But the thing is that I know this is coming. You know, I've always known this is coming. This shift is coming. And but it's which advertisers? See, now the crypto and a lot of freedom-oriented, leave-me-aloneism of decentralized, whatever the hell it is, worldwide, they're able to fund these kinds of shows that understand the importance of what they're doing. That wasn't there before. If you weren't, you know, all you had to do is listen to Rush Limbaugh on national and local advertisers, and you see what drove it. It was car dealerships, real estate, Snapple. I mean, you know, it's whatever conservative, and we got a group and we divided and we're going to take this half and they're taking that half, and they're buying Nikes with Kaepernick over here and they're buying Snapple with, you know, Rush Limbaugh over here. I mean, you know, it was just, I could see it, and it determined what got covered. And I had the faith. I go, no, I'm, you know, I don't care how long. I'm not doing that. Uh-huh. But what happened was, you see, when Dr. Ron Paul got all this attention in 7, 8, and it was, you know, after decades of saying the same thing. And all of a sudden, it came around. Well, we have yet to see this full realization of people being educated on this, which is why they had to shut all these alternative media. Very effective, some of the best research investigative journalism of guys that are standing outside Davos and Bilderberg and Council on This and the Trilateral, the Commission of That, and all the, they're good. Let me tell you what I, you know, and then they do the Project Veritas, where they got cute little girls going around and chatting up this guy at a bar, and they're sitting there and buying me a drink, and they sitting there taping them all this time. You know, this is that they go, yeah, you guys want to play? Let's play. So this is what's happening, and I'm looking for, when you do about working in the cubicle, this is the advice that I gave my kids, because I know they're coming out of high school and college. They're a totally different mindset of what they're getting in school and different stuff. They went to private school, so it wasn't as bad, but in college, it was definitely there. So I go, they get upset with their employer, or they're not doing it right, or I can't believe how dumb they are, and you know, they, my motivation is lacking, beatings will continue till morale improves, you know, that kind of thing. And I go, whoa, 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 whoa. And they're friends, and I said, look, you're not working for them. You're working for you, your reputation. You always do a good job. You always show up early. You always leave a little late. You always do more than what your share is. You always are the top employee. You always, why? For them? Screw them. It's for you. It's for your reputation and your work ethic, and them growing up in a restaurant, time to lean, time to clean. They got this like thing on their shoulders, like, man, I better be doing something productive, because, you know, because damn, that's just the way they think. Well, what happens? All of my kids are always the top employees. They're always the managers. They're always, you know, the go-to. They're always the last to get laid off, fired, whatever the heck. They're going to be fine. Why? Because they work for their reputation. They work for who they are. They bring to wherever they go their best. Time goes by faster. They're happier. They're more secure. Everything, sunshine and rainbows, you know, hopefully as much you can get away with, except my youngest daughter keeps getting in crashes. Not her fault. I mean, she's like a moving target, man. They're just bam, bam, bam. So she's got little back stuff going on. And did, I just feel so bad for her, man. She can't keep a new car more than one. She's got a brand new, you know, Toyota Highland, you know, big maroon, beautiful. 2 weeks, she gets rear-ended. I mean, you know, yeah, two other cars. She's just like, man, what the hell, you know? So it's not her fault, but damn it. But other than that, they're all in pretty good shape, and their life is pretty charmed. But it's from the basis of the social justice, what you're owed, you know, what they're going to do, and the employer, and they need to give me more. God, screw that. You work for your reputation and being known as a hard worker, and whenever you go anywhere, yep, they're totally rehired, and we love them long time, and don't be stupid on Facebook. I mean, you know, seriously, when they were younger and they're MySpace, I go, you know, there's some CIA guy going, thanks for playing, right? I mean, you know, don't be stupid. You know, if you put something up, it's, you know, yeah, you got to have this avatar online. Wow, I want to be like them. You know, now, whatever, you know, a lot of people, because they're in this attitude of, I have a dependency, I have a defect, I got, you know, multiple personality disorder of bipolar of whatever, so I get, like, extra leeway of something, you know, I was on Ambien, so I get to tweet whatever I want. I go, you do that, you try and do this identity politic thing, which we called it whatever before, I'm going, you're not going to be better off. That ain't happening. Yeah. And you sure as hell don't want to perpetuate that on the, you know, to the next generation. So they're going to be fine. We're going to be fine. I need to get better about,
no,
you know,
I know,
you know, money and stuff.
We're going to be, yeah, we're going to be great, and you're asking about the election. I think, and it's one of those things, you don't want to be too optimistic, and then, you know, for a bunch of reasons, then of course, people get complacent, and they don't go out and vote. But the momentum is definitely behind not just Trump, but, of course, he's the tails with the Republican Party, but it's gone into all segments. Like I said, the independents, maybe not all libertarians. I mean, of course, you know, maybe you'll vote in 2020. I still have hope, but for Trump. But the thing is, there is definitely a change and a shift.
They change the mechanism. They get to where I got faith in the process. You know, maybe.
Yeah.
But
well,
it ain't happen until then. I can guarantee that.
Well, okay. Well, first, I have to get going in a few minutes. I have two last quick things I want to see what your comments are on it. It was one a comment and one shared by my mom. I think you'll get a little chuckle out of. So the first is, speaking of the movement and the change and the consolidation, not just of Republicans, but of the American culture. And I think when people are voting for Trump and Republicans now, and I mean this here, Ernie, it's not about Republicans. I don't think people are voting Republican.
I don't either.
Because exactly. It's about you're making a statement about the direction of this culture to go. And I think people are realizing that this is a unique election for that reason. Well, that said, I just want to bring up your buddy that you love, of course, and we do in a way still on the show, Senator Rand Paul. And did you happen to see his speech? Because Donald Trump spoke in Kentucky the other day. And Rand Paul did the introductory act, and he did a heck of a firebrand speech. It was kind of like Rand Paul's version of a Trump speech. And oh boy, was he on the Trump train. Did you happen to see that?
No.
You should check it out. But he starts off, he's like, look, it's no secret that I was not a fan of the president, and I did not want in all this. And people are all kind of heckling him. And he goes, but he kind of grows on you. Anyway, he starts talking about all the things they did. And he was talking, not to a sales job for him on it. You guys can listen to it if you want. But just commenting that how surprised he was that of how he would take control over situations in ways that he never saw president do. Like he would just, you know, Rand would show up and say, look, you know, Mr. President, there's this problem with the tax bill, blah, blah, blah. And Trump, literally, he was watching him not just play politics, but as a businessman say, you know, he would all of a sudden pull over his main advisors and say, make it so now, boom. And then we get done. I mean, just that simple. And that was kind of his take-home message watching that. Well, anyway, Rand Paul, it's interesting. Him, you're seeing him, Ted Cruz.
It's going up right now. We'll have it up in 10 minutes.
Yeah, there you go. So anyway, so you guys check it out.
If it's not already.
But it was interesting to see Rand Paul and see what his political future is. I think he's also, like others, learning how to speak to America differently. We were talking this whole show about the culture, about things you couldn't say before, and Trump has blown that completely open, and the liberals can't stand it. They keep standing there saying, you can't say that, you can't do that, you can't do that. And America is finally saying, shut the hell up. You know, we're just tired of it, and that's the shift, and even with Rand Paul and others. So the last thing, and I have to get going, is my mom. Hey, Mom, again. But
hello.
She sent something over. Sheriff Joe is back in the news. And here's our buddy Sheriff Joe. It's kind of funny. So it turns out he's not going to eat Ben and Jerry's ice cream anymore. That's his statement. He wrote an editorial or something. And basically, he said that Bernie Sanders and his wife came to visit at Tent City years ago, and they were having some political discussion or whatever. I don't know. Somehow Bernie Sanders plays into this, and Bernie Sanders spoke with the Ben and Jerry's people. And Ben and Jerry's, of course, far, far leftist. They're in Vermont or wherever they're at. And they now have a competition that was reported in the paper where they're coming up with 7 new ice cream flavors, and each of the flavors is going to be named after a Democrat running for office.
Oh.
So they're going to try to have their ice cream be the marquee along with USA Today and the Post, you know, to try and get votes. So anyway,
Democrats can have their ice cream and eat it too, but they still lose.
Exactly. So Sheriff Joe's is bringing this up, and he goes, look, I'll even help them out by offering an ice cream flavor for me. He goes, how about pink peppermint swirls with a liberal helping of nuts? Because they could even call it Watch Out Joe. So, anyway, it's funny. He was basically, the point of the article is that we have gotten so much into partisanship, and he's admitting that I'm a partisan as well, clearly. But when we're getting down to ice cream, what did your friend say, the gentleman, about the gun rights that we've peak oppression, I think you said?
It was Paul Rosenberg. I go, are we, because it was just some crazy stuff was going on a year or two ago, and I go, man, are we at peak tyranny? I mean, it seems like they can't possibly go.
Yeah.
And he goes, no. They're always, they can make it worse. But I think we're at peak obedience.
That's exactly. That's a great term there, Ernie. And I think to end the show, and thanks to my mom's article with this, in some ways, it's Sheriff Joe with the last word. Sheriff Joe, of all people, to say we've gone too far when I can't even get my damn ice cream. We're going to make ice cream political advertisements. We've gone too far. We are at peak oppression, peak tyranny, and
well, they're thinking the market. They're making, see, it's fill a need, create a need, Now, if they create a need and then fill it, they already got the filling for it. So what did they do? They created this social justice collectivist consensus opinion of you have to think this way. And oh, by the way, every freaking Disney movie of every kid from 2 years old on to 20. And then, you know, if you still want to have influence, you just have Miley Cyrus and Britney Spears and Christina Aguilera being Mouseketeers or whatever turned slut. And then all of a sudden, now you got them, you know, for another 5-6 years into their college years or something. And then what do? Well, you're influencing them to think this about that, and you market to them to the point that it's oversaturation. You get exposed to it. The alternative media is out there calling BS on it. So then what do? You got to censor the alternative media. And all of this is, you know, people just aren't that stupid in the long run. And that's what's happening. They don't know what to do other than what they're doing. And it just perpetuates the acknowledgement, you know, of they're being stupid. You know?
So, Ernie, I want to ask you a question before I go. So, and this is really a great topic for maybe another time, but I'm curious your thought. So, you know, you talk about wallet voting, which is, I don't know if you came up with that term or not, but I was.
No, I got walletvoting.com.
All right, well, there
back
you go.
Back free, right. Man.
There you go.
Oh, that's sitting there waiting for me to, I'm going to get some.
Well, I think you will, because I've been hearing that term on other shows. People I know. Talking about wallet voting, right?
I can see my traffic coming in from that.
Well, so, all right, we'll get another point to Ernie. There we go. So the thing is, we have, like, with Sheriff Joe with the ice cream, right? So, all right, so now what? So now Breyers maybe is owned by a Republican, and they now have, you know, Trump on a Trump truffle ice cream or something, right? And we do something else. So now ice cream becomes partisan. We're already seeing this with coffee, right? Starbucks has been so left-leaning, we just kind of took it for granted, right? Every time you walk in, save the whales, blah, 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 whatever, every time you buy a cup of Joe. And then so now what? Now you have right-wing coffee, right? Did you hear that one? It's got I forget the name of it. Sarvi, what is the name of that coffee? She's checking it out. So we actually bought one to support them. But a company got together made up of veterans. And they just said, heck, and we're tired of all this liberal coffee money every time we
Black
buy.
Rifle.
It's called Black Rifle Coffee. There's a free, thank you. Yeah, Black Rifle Coffee. And of course, they have them in 32, like, caliber rounds. There's, like, cartridges that you do little K-cups for. It's pretty cool. But anyway, but it's all made and packaged by veterans. And, you know, like, hey, if you buy coffee, why do you have to be bombarded with left stuff? We'll talk about, you know, about saving our, about our troops, whatever, you know. So now coffee is all partisan, and now they're building a chain of anti-Starbucks that are all conservative Starbucks going on in certain states right now. So now we have that. Then we have, of course, you know, the thing is how farther, and that is wallet voting, okay? But the question winds up being is when does wallet voting become, I mean, I see the power of it, and it's very important. But at some, but is it good ultimately? Or if you think about a time when we had in our country when we never talked about politics, when ice cream was not political, when you saw your doctor, you didn't have to worry if they were liberal or conservative. And I have to say, it's one of the concerns I've had, you know, coming out with the Trump report early on, is, you know, despite the fact that everyone said that you'd be a hateful racist, whatever. But, you know, I mean, I don't want necessarily my personal views being mixed with my professional. You know, as a doctor, everyone's my patient. I treat them equal, and that's the way it should be. But now we're getting to a point where, you know, if people really want to research me, they'll probably see the Trump report come up, and I know I've certainly got a lot of patients from that. Not that I advertise it, and I don't talk about it in my office in any way. Although I do have a big gold rifle over my ultrasound machine, so maybe that kind of gives it away. But seriously, I don't. But that's where we're leaning. We're on the cusp. Where everything, where even your doctor, your accountant, everything becomes what side, what team are you on? And yes, that is wallet voting. But I think before we go completely wallet voting, we need to really take a deep breath. Like even Sheriff Joe is pointing it out. And go back to a time when, like my mother would say and others would say, you know, you don't talk about religion or politics. And I used to always, you know, jest her on that. I'd say, well, why not? You know, I used to think that that was important. But I can see my mom was right. Ultimately, she's right. And I think that older time bred civility, because otherwise we have what we have now. So that's the question posed to you with that context, is wallet voting is clearly in principle, I do agree with it 100%, but at what point is it detrimental to our culture?
Wow. So what was the question? While voting,
we might save for next show, I guess.
Well, but, I mean, just you know, summarize the question. There was a whole bunch I'm trying to keep track. It's like,
yeah, well, I'm just pointing out that wallet voting is an important critical principle. Clearly, we all understand why, but it's almost like the left has pushed it to such a degree. Now the right is starting to echo it, like with the coffee and other things, and now we're starting to have partisanship in everything. You know, ice cream, coffee, our businesses. I mean, again, with Star Wars, all the things we've talked about.
How right. No, this is what they leave open. This is what they, you know, leave
So the point is, Ernie, is too much wallet voting a bad thing?
This is what's going to happen. Whether it's good or bad or not, this is what's going to happen. Seattle, very liberal. Starbucks, considered liberal. Starbucks, it's going to get to the point that, God forbid, you walk in there with a MAGA hat, okay? So it's getting to the point where, you know, hey, man, you gave black guys free coffee. Do I get free coffee? Your rate, and then you could, you know, you go in, you ask for free coffee, they give you free coffee, you know, because you know, and then you know, do you have homeless shelters? Their bathroom. I mean, you know, I mean, it goes on and on and on. It has a big impact on their sales. It starts to, you know, some wallet voting happening, and the conservatives need not apply. So that leaves a big opening for there's a coffee shop near us called Desert Eagle. And when this is happening, I asked him, because it was convenient and it's a drive-through thing with two lanes and so on. I go, have you guys gotten busier? Oh, hell yeah. Why? Because they're not political. You know, I don't care. And so that I see this kind of wallet voting opens up enormous opportunities for somebody else. That's what I see. Oh, we lost him. Yeah. All right, well, that's enough. That kind of answers this question anyway. He had to go. Well, peace out, guys. You know, tomorrow, another great show. Do you know who's on tomorrow, Donna?
Corbett and Mikovits.
Oh, James Corbett, the Corbett Report. Whoa, that's going to be a continuation of having some fun. All right, we'll see you then. Peace.